course, in the book of Genesis, the 49th chapter. And before we begin, I want to tell you, when I go through the names, and we'll actually go through what's being said here, I know that it's easy to go through them rapidly and quickly and just go on the next one, the next one, the next one, and finish the chapter. However, I think it's very important that we spend a little bit of time understanding a little bit what was being said to them by Israel and what those words mean, and if we can come to have a better overall picture, because it's really it written in the book of Bereshit. We need to know that's the beginning of something. So we have to kind of keep that in mind. So we're going to read Genesis, the 49th chapter, and it'll be from verse 13 to verse 21. All right, verse 13 to 21.
Zebulun will live by the seashore and become a haven for ships. His border will extend towards Sidon. Issachar is a raw-boned donkey lying down between two saddlebags. When he sees how good is his resting place and how pleasant is his land, he will bend his shoulder to the burden and submit to forced labor. Dan will provide justice for his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan will be a serpent by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels, but its rider stumbles backwards. I look for your deliverance, O Lord. Gad will be attacked by a band of raiders, but he will attack them at their heels. Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. Naphtali is a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns.
Interesting comments here, aren't there, from Israel. What is it, your thoughts?
I recently heard that Issachar, it was a man who knew the signs of the times. But that was through the Christian perspective by Reverend Swindoll, I think it was. How do they get that out of the verses that we see about Issachar here?
Okay. I've not heard that about that, but I'll do my very best to see if I can give you an answer. All right. We move pretty lengthy, by the way, in Issachar. There's a lot to talk about Issachar. Now, it may seem strange to you or to me, because we read what it says there, and you can read it in Hebrew as well as you can read it in English, that it's strange that on verse 28, we're not there yet, that these are called the blessings. And to some of us, we begin to wonder, okay, they may seem to be, some of them, a cursing. What about Reuben? What was a blessing given to him? Levi, what was a blessing given to him? Simeon, what was a blessing that was given to him? Judah, well, we may see a blessing given to him. So we got one out of the four, right, in our thinking, all right? And then, you know, baby Zebulun, you might think of more of a blessing, even though, you know, it appears it didn't come out correct. Issachar, yeah, becoming a, he read it right, forced laborer. Really not a bunch of a blessing. It seems more of a curse, doesn't it? Okay. And then it says about Dan. Now, odd about this thing about Dan, he's kind of connected to the serpent rather than to Elohim. Wow. Is that a curse or is that a blessing? Now, Israel said it is a blessing. These are the blessings that he had given to his sons. And so we say, okay, is my thinking like Israel's thinking or my thinking like Richard's thinking? You know, Richard's thinking is way off. I got to stop and think about how, what was Israel thinking? And remember I said at the very beginning of this particular section that it says that Jacob called his sons unto him and said, hear what your father Israel has to say. Not what your father Jacob has to say, but your father Israel. All right? So we come into this thing and we're saying, okay, we got Gad, Asher, and Naphtali. You know, they seem to have a fair better at the end than the other brothers. Like, there's no real chaos going against them, except maybe one of them had a little trouble, but, you know, all comes out okay for them. we're not into Joseph, but Joseph seems that his blessings were immeasurable. Like you can't count them. They're so overwhelming. They outproduce all the other blessings the rest of the brothers combined together. That's how our thinking is when we think about Joseph, don't we? When we think about Joseph. And this really odd blessing of Benjamin. He's a wolf. That's odd. I'm not going to go into Joseph and wolf today. I got too much to say about these guys first. The reason why I think it's very, very important for us, because we think of Israel sometimes in our thinking, modern day thinking, we either think of Jews, or we might think of Ephraim, and we might stretch our to Manasseh. Okay, because, you know, most of us have a belief system that we are either one or the other, and some parts of Europe is either one or the other, like England is one or the other, of Manasseh or Ephraim. That's the basic concept of believing. But what about the others? Why is it that Jacob, actually Israel, had to say something about them too? If they're not important, why didn't he just talk about Judah and Joseph and be finished? Because see, in our thinking, in our brain, our few beings, we don't see evidence of, I'll get you saved in a minute, we don't see evidence of the blessings to Reuben. We don't see the evidence of blessings to Levi, even though they're the priesthood. We don't see a blessing to Simeon. Who are they? We might see a blessing to Judah. Zebulun. What? You know, so our eyes are blinded to what is being there.
I think like so many others, that they paid not kind of indirectly for their sin, but in the overall, which Joseph doesn't seem to have any, I mean, none recorded anyway.
Correct.
You look in Genesis chapter 7, all these tribes are listed as birthing 12,000 evangelists in these last days. So maybe the blessing is way out there.
Well, yeah, okay. Now this yeah. Was, remember we said the first part of this chapter? It's the end time or the latter days that's going to take effect. We think when we look at these things, it's not, that's history. It happened to them, they're coming and gone, they disappeared. Well, see, either if they disappeared, then the book of Genesis, 49th chapter, is a lie. How can you accept that? So we have to look at these characteristics. What is it that's characteristic about these men that will be revealed in the latter days? We know that Reuben paid a high price. He lost that position. Does that mean he's damned forever? Oh, no. Has to accept the mere fact he doesn't have it. Somebody else was given it instead. But we've learned from Reuben, what is the function of the firstborn? Wow. More dynamic and powerful than all the others. And we know that must relate to being the Messiah, being that dynamic and holding the excellency of the Father. Yes.
And then what you're saying, Richard, as I understand it, is that these prophecies, which is what they are really, it's a prophetic word that gives a hint that we can explore, but we won't fully understand their full significance until it's actually occurred in
Correct.
The end days.
That's right, because it comes to the conclusion of the end. This is my personal belief. This is my how I look at this, how I look at Genesis. Yes, the beginning, but in the beginning it tells you the conclusion, right? And Genesis tells you, the 24th chapter, in a sense, tells you the complete conclusion. We say, huh? No, it doesn't. Revelations does. Well, true. However, Revelations, should I say, backs up Genesis? It's not the other way around. And the Christian world, the New Testament comes first, and the Old Testament kind of, you know, comes secondary. Primary number one? No, the New Testament backs up and supports the Old, not the other way around. So now when we look at these people, we look at these men, and we think, okay, it's a nationality characteristic and the function of that particular group of Israelites, right? Each one of the tribes. And so, you know, there have been people who labeled Reuben being unstable as water. And of course, they think, oh, he's got a problem with sex. You know what unstable of water means? A river that continually flows and moves its course. Mississippi has moved its course several times, hasn't it? The Nile has moved its course several times, hasn't it? All rivers, especially when the storm comes, guess what happens? They overflow their bank. And sometimes they renavigate to another direction, and the old direction is closed off because the movement of the earth from there. Doesn't mean it's unstable that he isn't. Because he's constantly moving under turmoils, difficulties. Let's get to Gad, though. I mean, not to Gad, but to Zebulun. He says, you dwell at the haven of the sea. I'm reading this in 1611 English. For he is an haven of ships. His brother shall be, or his border shall be unto Sidon. Okay, what does haven mean? I'm sorry, what?
Safe harbor.
Safe harbor, place of safety. What's it supposed to save? Be safe for? Ships! Oh! In the latter days, Zebulun is going to do what? Be a place of safety for, now we don't know if it's military ships or merchant ships, do we? Does it matter? We'll get to that point later. So, we see the latter days that, oh, they border what? Sidon? Zidon? Where is Zidon at? It's a southern border on the coast of what we call Lebanon today. That once is the place. And that's the place. And it was, quote, in your scriptures may say it's Phoenician. No, Phoenician wasn't there during the time of what was going on in Egypt there. Phoenician came in later. The person who wrote this was telling us where that location is at. What was that city known for? No. Trade. Biggest trading port there was in that area, and Zebulun would be in control. So it kind of tells us maybe there's a safe haven for not merchant ships, but military ships, but for the merchants themselves. But aren't it just any merchants? No, I think there can be safety for all of Israel. The other tribes of Israel, we can put their port in there. That Zebulun will be one that will be responsible for and will uphold the safety of the ships. Now, we can take it physically. That's good. Or you can take it in a spiritual point of sense. Yes.
This hasn't been fulfilled yet.
Sorry, what?
This hasn't been fulfilled yet.
Not been fulfilled yet in the physical sense. That is correct. Because they've never lived by the sea. There's no map showing Zebulun ever lived by the sea.
It's interesting here, Richard. It says that Sidon means hunting, but in the sense of fishing.
Correct.
So it's all about, Yeshua said, fishes of men. You could almost see.
What was she doing? What was she doing? She's taking it away. Yes.
Oh, but sorry.
Well, we'll get a little bit farther than that, because a little farther than this, that we have to go
like
farther.
It's fishing for men,
okay,
right?
But we have to get farther than this. I grant you this true. Now we have to ask ourselves some questions. Daniel?
Along those lines, those of you who are very familiar with our local port, known as, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area, when a place which is a safe haven for merchant ships, what is the natural characteristic of the place? Well, it becomes very, quote, corrupted, being influenced by everybody else under the sun there is. Changing your own belief in a God quite readily and very, almost instantaneously by the new influences that happen with that particular person. So just being a safe harbor for ships is not necessarily a good thing, but it's something which they end up being. And I also want to get a comment when we get to Issachar too, but we'll get there when you get there. So.
We're not in Issachar yet. Okay, now remember I said last Sabbath? that what did Yahshua say about the Torah and the prophets? Yeah, Troy, they will not pass away, yeah. He was correcting the Pharisees because they believed in something that wasn't true. What did they believe in? No. They believed that the Torah and the law will bring and give you life. And he says, no. In the Torah and in the prophets, it's talking about me. Okay, so we have to see a picture here. In the Bereshit, there is a beginning of something, of an action, of who's acting, who's doing this function in the book of Genesis, who's in control, who is, what do I want to say? What is the book of Genesis really all about? The actions of whom? Elohim, get this into your mind. I want to get this into your mind because that's what Bereshit's all about. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Oh, that was the end of the story? Oh, no. We've gone through Joseph. We've gone through Jacob. We've gone through Abraham. How God is directly, not indirectly, not sidestep, not just bringing something about because, oh, that, I got to solve that problem. Oh, you did that wrong. He breathes about everything according to his will. He has never made a mistake. We made mistakes. That's not his problem. He's going to carry out his word whether we want it or not, right? So we're looking here in the book of Genesis, the 49th chapter. I want you to kind of think, yes, it is Israel saying this. And what does Israel mean? Prince with God. Ruler with God. So now we're hearing whom? Jacob? Who is the prince with, not of, with God? So what comes out of his mouth? Do you believe it? Or just Jacob's ideas? Now, see, I want to concentrate very heavily because I've been, you know this and you've been taught this, that these are just, you know, characteristics of the nations, of the personality of the people. The truth is, it's the character and personality and nature of Elohim. This is what he's going to carry out. We could say, well, you got it all wrong. That's true. I get a lot of things wrong, by the way. Does God get things wrong? So when you look at these things, go deep in the future, and you'll be able to have a little better understanding. I hope. Better understanding. Got a little picture now about who did you talk about? Who was it talking about? Oh, Zebulon. And I'm glad you had lost a little bit because we're talking about here what the actions of God are. Now, I will always say this about the book of Genesis. I cannot get past that point. It's always about. And it says, Yahvomer Elohim, thus says the Lord. Thus says Elohim, thus says God. Now, verse 14, Issachar. Very interesting statement. Now, what I got to saying about these are the words of God, God's going to carry them out. Not because he has to do what Israel said, and he has to back up what Israel said. No, Israel has to back up what God says. Right? Just like New Testament has to back up the old. Right? So we're looking here, we're seeing, and try to get this picture in our mind. Issachar, I'm going to read it in English, 1611 English, is a strong ass crouching down between two burdens. He saw that rest was good and that the land is pleasant and bowed his shoulder to bear and become a servant unto tribute. Huh? What does that mean? Does it sound like a blessing or a curse? Now, he read it right. Becoming a slave, in a sense, or becoming a worker by force, a forced worker. Now, when you think of forced worker, you know, World War II, who's a forced worker? The Jews were forced to work, right? Or anybody else that disobeyed monks. Oh, those must have been really Issachar people and not the Jewish people. We're talking toward the very end. That's a very interesting word. What does the word strong mean? Don't think it means you think it means. It means bone. Bone. Bone? Yeah, I have bone. Bone. But that means it's the structure. The structure of Issachar is bones. Now, what do bones do? They support. Now, what happened now? It says, as an ass. You know what an ass is in Hebrew? Sorry, what? In a sense, it means brownish red that boils up. Boils up? You ever had a pot of water and you turned it on and it boiled up? Is it hot? Yeah, it's hot. And the brownish red has to do with the strength of the outer portion of it, of basically a male ass. But it's funny that this comes, but it's Lamentations. I want you to turn to Lamentations here. And Lamentations 1, verse 20. But now you have a little bit clarification of this word if it's translated as ass, which is true. It's a good word. You think of donkey. But this is going to be done. Remember, he was a strong or a bone, and he is an ass. All right? Now we come here, and it says here, behold, verse 20 of Lamentations, O Yahuwah, for I am distressed. This is Jeremiah saying this. And my bowels are troubled. My heart is turned within me, for I have grievously rebelled. Aboard the sword, bereaves at home, there is death. Huh? Where is this word that means boiled up or fermented or glow into redness? That's a really odd word here. The word is troubled. The word is troubled. Troubled. Why I'm troubled. Oh, that's interesting. Now, we know this much about a donkey or an ass. Yes, it pulls something, it carries thing. What does it carry? Trouble. Got a message? You know what I'm saying now? Donkey is carrying something. Lamentations, verse 2, verse 11. Mine eyes do fail with tears. My bowels are, as it were, troubled. My liver is poured upon the earth for the destruction of the daughter of my people because of the children and the sucklings swoon in the streets of the city. Now here the Lord is saying, I am troubled. All right, let's go back now to Issachar. Very interesting person. Let's go back here. And it says now, Issachar is a strong ass crouching down. That means a phrase of all four. Like an animal goes down on all four. Crouching down. What is he doing? He's between two, and it says burdens. So he's crouching down. He's carrying on his body. Two burdens, not two blessings. Two burdens, yes.
Does it say between two burdens? Or I'm thinking that the burdens are on the sides of him, not on his back.
Okay, They are, but what it is, it both with sheep and with goats and with donkeys or asses, when you want to load them, you have to go through two posts or two corrals. That's what that means of that one there. He's going in between these two locations. He's bowing down something we put upon him. And that's what we're going to find out, that word burden, all right? What that word burden means. When you want to load a donkey or an ass, you got to make sure that he doesn't run away. How do they do that? They put him between two posts. Can't get out. Helps you to understand a little bit why it says he is a, what? Forced laborer. All right. Is that a blessing or is that a curse? Could be either one. Let's continue on here. I just want to carry all these words. Now go on to the word burden. And the burden means, or it means a stall. There's two stalls. You're between two stalls, like I said before. And it is for one reason, and for one reason only. And that is that it is to wear something away or be worn away. Wear something down or be worn down. You know what that means? Okay, if you have a burden, a difficulty, it can do one or two things with you. It can wear you out. It can exhaust you. It can become something harder than you could possibly bear. Or you can take charge of that burden or that trouble and you do something with it. You take it on, quote, voluntarily, in a quote. Both and all four knees or legs or down. So Issachar is going to do something. Or at the end time, we have to see something. But we have the picture of what it's completely part of. Okay, yes.
Yeah. The lexicon here says burdens is mishpat, fireplaces, ash heaps,
correct,
or sheepfolds.
Correct.
So if you looked at that meaning, then it would carry kind of a significance. Like,
okay, there's only one place I found that says sheepfold. Now, what is a sheepfold? Right.
Where the shepherd...
Let's go to Judges, the fifth chapter.
Okay.
Judges, the fifth chapter, because you brought that up and need to know about that burden. It has to do with Judges, the fifth chapter. And it has to do with Deborah, by the way. It's during the time of Deborah. All right, and this is one of her songs. This is a song she and the other guy wrote. So they were together. Verse 15, and the princes of Issachar were with Deborah, even Issachar, and also Barak. He was sent on foot into the valley. For the divisions of Reuben were great thought of heart. In other words, they're thinking about Reuben. They wanted their idea of that the leadership of the prince of Issachar and Barak, because Reuben was in serious trouble. And their heart was desirous to go after and protect him. Verse 50, continue on. Another translation of that very same word is the book of, it's in there, and it says here, verse 16. I'm going to read verse 16 here. And it says, why hast thou abode between the boundaries, which is the very same word, burden, that's translated there in the other language. So we're looking at the sheepfold. It's amongst the sheepfold here, the bleating of the flock. So now we have Issachar putting something upon his shoulder. He put something of the pain of Reuben, who is one of the sheepfold or one of the burdens. You understand what I'm saying now? Because that's the only place I found it translated sheepfold. Not a good translation. It's more like boundaries or the post. Okay? Like in that, bowing down, putting that on his shoulder. We have to have two of them. We'll get there today. Now, I want to continue on. This, I think Issachar, were interesting people, or interesting prophecies, I should say. In verse 6, back in Genesis 49th chapter, verse 15, "And he," that is Issachar, "saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his neck to bury and become a servant unto tribute." Wow. What does that mean? What do you think that means? Now we're talking about Issachar. See, what I'm talking about, it's important to read and understand the men that Israel was prophesying and gave a blessing to. And now we might be able to see and understand a little bit more about the blessing. Now we would say, "I don't want to carry anybody's burden. That's a curse." Wow. Now what do you think about this guy?
It says that he saw the rest, or he saw the blessing afar off and figured the burden is worth it for the future generations.
All right. So we're going to get into that word rest. Don't think it really means word rest in the sense that it is what we think it is. Doesn't mean Shabbat. It means a peaceful place. No war. And in a gentle place, the place you want to live is live of comfort. So he saw the quietness in that, and it says, in the land that was pleasant. You know what pleasant means? Agreeable. Simple as that. Oh, that's a very pleasant land. I'm going to agree with this. So he's going to go in there and carry two burdens, carrying him into a land that has a place of peacefulness, right? And it also has a place where it is, hey, agreeable. What does that mean, agreeable? It means it's a blessing. So we kind of see here now, even though it looks like Issachar received a curse, what he has done, he has also received a blessing, and he said, "Lay it on me." Wow. All right, now we know this thing, the tribute. You mentioned about being a servant and a tribute. And the servant, the tribute means the one that's, you know what servant means. I'm going to talk about servant in just a minute. Sometimes you and I, we take a word that is in both English and in Greek and in Hebrew or in any other language, and we sometimes stick with only one definition of that word. And so we stick with that one definition of that word. We believe that is the true definition of that word. But that's not the true definition of every word. Even in Hebrew and in English and in Greek, it's how it's used within that text tells you whether or not it is a curse or a blessing. Right? So it says he was a what? He was going to be a slave or a bonded servant, or he was going to be what? What was your translation on there, Bill? You forgot. You're stuck on something else.
Stuck on rest.
Okay. Forced labor. Forced laborer or forced worker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Submit to forced labor. Let me ask you a question. Does that parallel any human being on the face of earth that's ever lived? Whom? Yeah. Do you think he went voluntarily to the cross? No, he said three times, "If it's possible, take it away. It's possible, take it away. It's possible." No, no, no. Oh, wow. Then what did Yeshua see? He saw something. What did he see? He saw rest. Okay. And that word rest is what? In Hebrew here. What did I say rest was? Peacefulness, quietness. So he saw quietness and peacefulness. And then he saw the land. And the land was what? Pleasant. When he accepted the burden, it became pleasant to him. Willingly. went down on all fours to carry two burdens. Two, not one, two. Wow. You understand what I'm saying? It is a prophecy, yes, to be carried forward in the future. And every time I see these talks about these men, I do see something deep in the future. Yes, it can be directly related to, and I have no doubt related to, the actual tribe itself will be doing these things at the end time. But it's also a picture of something else. They had a good example before them. They had an example of the Messiah doing this. Reuben had an example of the Messiah. Oh, he will have an example. The family of Reuben will have an example of the Messiah before. Oh, we can go that way. All these men will go that way, including Levi and Simeon. It looked like they had a curse. But he said, "Do not, I don't want my soul. I don't want my soul," Israel said, "I don't want my soul to be associated with you." What did Israel say was to be cursed in Simeon and Levi? What was to be cursed? Fire. Their anger. He's gonna damn the anger, eliminate the anger, wipe it out. You think God's mad? You think God likes being mad? Do you think Yahshua got mad? Do you think he liked getting mad? Do you think of the anger inside of him really did something? Now look at the Bible. You see, over time, the wrath of the Lord, he did this, did that. Do you think God was angry? Do you think he likes being angry? No, he wants the elimination of it. And so we see Levi serving the people as high priest and as a priesthood, doing just the opposite, but it looks like.
I'm just probably missing something, but you keep saying blessings and cursings like everything that Jacob was going to say was a blessing.
Yes.
But what the first verse says is that come to gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in
the
last
day. What does verse 48 say?
Okay, that's probably what I'm missing. And these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them. Oh, and he blessed them.
His blessing. These are blessings.
See,
in our thinking, they were judgments and condemnations and wickedness and how bad you are. And the truth is, they're blessings in the end time. That means their past is finished. They don't have to remember the past. Do you want to remember your past? You want to be gone, don't you? All of Israel, what did Apostle Paul say? When the number of Gentiles come in, then all of Israel will be what? Saved. Delivered out of all this mess. You think Israelites are all wonderful people? No, they're not. They're like you and I. All right, does that kind of answer your question?
Each blessing is an attribute of Messiah, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Which will be befall upon each one of the tribes of Israel. It will come to them.
Yeah.
Am I talking off the top of my head? Or am I making sense? The prophecies and these blessings are fantastic. I look at it from that point of view. And the last word I want to go through is the word work. It says servant. The reason why it's important, we need to kind of look at this thing, because sometimes we have this, I'm going to read a couple of places, and about the word serve. We've talked about you are serve rather than what we call slave labor, bond servant. Talk about this word in Hebrew. Let's go to Exodus, the 20th chapter. Exodus. What's the 20th chapter about? You remember now, Issachar voluntarily and willingly is going to do that. He's going to carry two burdens. And since he's going to carry, and spiritually speaking, picture the Messiah carries two curses. Get rid of the trouble. Eliminate them. You've got to get rid of one, and then he has to get rid of the other one. We're not there yet. Thou shalt, verse 5, thought it was going to go to the tenth. You thought it was going to go to the labor, the one about the Sabbath worship. No, verse 5. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I am Yahuwah, thy Elohim, and I'm a jealous Elohim, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation that hate me. This is an amazing story. We don't like this story. We don't like this command. We don't hate it. Wait a minute. Why are you visiting to the third and fourth generation? You must be a liar, God. No, he's not lying. Telling the truth. How many of you today are bearing a curse that your father or grandfather or great-grandfather or mother, great-grandmother did? Yeah. I'm one of those two. Now, why did he say, but I will show mercy unto thousands, not thousands of generations, but for anyone who loves me. So you can reverse the curse personally. But do you bear it? Yeah. You bear the shame? Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not guilty. Of course I'm not. By the way, did you know that I, Richard, am not guilty of the sins that occurred in the Garden of Eden? By the way, do you know you're not guilty of the sins that occurred in the Garden of Eden? Did you know the Apostle Paul said you're not guilty for the sins you committed in the Garden of Eden? However, you're paying the price. And you kind of kid yourself that you're not paying the price. How many people in the past are still alive that didn't pay death? Only one. Only one. Now let's go down to the ninth, Exodus 20th chapter, verse 9. And he says, 6 days thou shalt labor. That word in Hebrew is serve. Not the other word. And do thy work. Verse 20, 10 or there. But on the seventh day is a Sabbath day of Yahuwah, thy Elohim, in that thou shalt not do thy any work, thou and thy son and thy daughter and maidservants and manservants and so on and so forth for 6 days. Now, what's the moratorium on? The moratorium is on work. Moratorium is not on service. Work is occupation. Service is not occupation. Unless you turn that service into an occupation, then that becomes a work. That's where the word servile work comes in. You've turned your occupation of serving people into a work, a job, a creation, bringing money and doing a job on that side. That's another issue. I don't want to go there. But the word work, to let you know, really means, it says you do your work. That word means in Hebrew, employment. Simplicity of the word, employment. That includes tilling the soil or going to work and bringing occupation. What keeps you gainly employed? Okay? That's what the moratorium's on. Let's go one more word. Go ahead.
That word abad, which means service.
Correct.
But it's also abodah, which is from that root. It can be mean work. It can also mean worship.
But not the worship of the weak one there. Okay, really weak. Because that's true. You worship in the synagogue, but or you worship at the temple. But what are you really doing in the temple?
You're God.
Serving. So the word really is more closer connected to serving rather than sit there and says, oh, see, you. Praise the Lord, praise the Lord, praise the Lord. Praise. Okay, let's leave. That's not work. That's not serving. That's not doing anything for anybody. You're being lazy doing nothing.
Right.
I don't like that other terminology which people turn around and make like that's worship. Worship means that which you honor and glorify.
Well, that's the work that you're doing. Right. That is your required service
that's
to the Lord.
That's required service to the Lord.
Yeah.
That's what I've been glad by that. But
that's how it's to be understood.
That's how it's to be understood. Okay,
yeah.
Good. Now, tribute. We shall talk about Issachar. Oh, wow. I don't know, I'm going to finish this at all. I'll end with Issachar. What do you think tribute means? Forced labor, taxes, can be money, and it can be basically being forced. This is weird, isn't it? You think it's a blessing? Well, now, remember what he did during time of Deborah? They didn't have to go and help Reuben out. They didn't have to go there. But their heart was wanting to save and help Reuben. And the prince of Issachar went into there to help the Reubenites. And it's forced labor. Okay. All right. Sheesh. Yeah, I better call it quits. I'm way behind time. I get excited about these things. But what I'm trying to tell you, basically in the book of Genesis, don't take these men and just assume something when it really relates to the Word of God, really relates to what He is going to do, relates to what He is going to plan to do. And yes, you could read in the history of certain types happened to the tribe, yes. But it has not fulfilled the command yet. The things are not to the end yet. In the latter days, more will be told to us, and all of a sudden our eyes will be open and we will see. We'll understand. Do I understand them? No. Do I try to understand them? Yes. Do I get some of the points? Perhaps. Do I think it's ancient history? It has nothing to do with the Messiah? Absolutely not. It has everything to do with Messiah. All house of Israel, are they connected or not connected? Well, according to the prophecy, they are connected to the Messiah. Now, did they disobey? Yes. Did they transgress? Yes. And you who came from the Gentile world, did you not be blessed and they be cursed? Oh, no. You're being blessed because, as Paul says, they rejected and they receiving a curse in their lifetime. That tribe, each tribe receiving a curse. But when I have, this is the Creator, when I have counted the number of Gentiles that I want, do you think I'm going to ignore what I said to Abraham? Do you think I'm going to ignore that promise I said to Isaac? To Jacob? Or do you think I will fulfill what I told them? They will. For none have received the promise. They all died.